Hello, and welcome to the Movie Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll have a spoiler-filled discussion about a movie we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kate, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the movie Jumper from 2008. Mm-hmm. We may also talk about the series of novels it's based on. I've read the first of them at least 10 years ago, because it was before the movie came out. Probably, 15 or 20. And there's also a TV show that's kind of related to this called Impulse, which... I don't know if it's in continuity with the movie or not, but is based on, I think, the third of the novels, maybe?
Okay. Well, let's take a moment to acknowledge the cast.
Okay.
Because they got a cast that, whether or not they had a lot of credits back in 2008, has a lot of credits at this point. Rachel Bilson, who has at least one, I think, two CW shows behind her, as well as Take-Two.
Mm-hmm.
Anna Sophia Robb, who has quite a few movies. Hayden Christensen, who did some of the Star Wars stuff.
Which I think might have been before this, but I'm not sure. Around this time, give or take.
See, that's what I was trying to figure out. Michael Rooker.
Yeah, who's since gone on to do, among other things, Guardians of the Galaxy. And he might have also been in Walking Dead.
Oh, interesting. Samuel L. Jackson.
Who's done a lot of things for forever and a day.
Yeah.
This actually would have been around the time of Iron Man.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Probably before Iron Man by a couple of months. Because this would have been a February release. Iron Man was summer. So yeah, they had definitely a good cast. The basic premise is you've got a kid who discovers he can teleport. They call it jumping. And he's in a not-so-great situation at home, so he runs away. Uses his abilities to rob banks.
Well, let's start with that very first teleportation, because it was very much a kid's teleportation, and they used a sign on the wall to explain why he kept ending up in the same place originally. Escape to the library.
Yes, there's the whole concept of what's your safe space or whatever, and that's where he kept winding up.
Yeah.
And the first time he teleports there, it was life or death situation, just, you know, triggered the response. Then he gets home into a not-so-good situation with his dad, ends up teleporting back there again, which he had to be thinking, man, I just walked home.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
But then he figures out how to go back. And then there's the learning curve and stuff. What can he do? What can he not do?
Can he only go to places he's been before, or can he go to any place he can visualize?
Well, and I think, and again, it's been forever since I've read the book. I plan on rereading it again. We'll probably do episodes on the books. But in the book, I think it was essentially line of sight. You had to see it to do it.
And they toy with that at one point in a park.
Yeah, but I think in the book, it was even using like a video camera. It didn't have to be his line of sight, but it had to be like a real-time kind of...
You know, and that's interesting because they toy with that in a character moment when we've kind of fast forwarded from the teenage shenanigans mm-hmm. of he's just gotten out of dad's house and he's robbed the banks to have money.
Mm-hmm.
Now we fast forward to, okay, he's living the high life on the ill-gotten gains and just traveling for fun. And he's in this New York apartment bouncing around. And he sees on the news that floodwaters have risen surprisingly fast, mm-hmm. and they're questioning, can rescue vehicles even get to these people in time? And he simply walks by the news coverage that's showing specific individuals in need of rescue. And it was, for me, a character moment of he's focused on himself. It doesn't even occur to him to look at that and realize I could teleport to those people and help them.
One, it doesn't occur to go help. Two, I don't know if he'd have been able to, because was that a live feed? Does his powers in this reality, you know, work over that kind of a thing? And with enough, to me, it I mean, like Nightcrawler of the X-Men, it's a literally a line of sight kind of a thing. He's got to be able to see where he's going. And they fudge that at times if he can teleport somewhere else if he can't see it, but there's risk because you don't want to teleport into the middle of something. That risk didn't seem to be a reality in this reality. And it was weird because at one point he had teleported after he'd gotten effectively harpooned by the paladin. The paladins are the people hunting jumpers because they don't think it's, they think it's an abomination. But they've got these almost like Daredevil's billy club kind of a thing that shoots a grappler hook out or whatever. He get hit by one of those and then teleports to his safe room where he's got all his money. And the line wound up going through the door. Or through the wall, I mean. And I was confused by that.
Yeah. Well, I was confused. Part of it was he was kind of fritzing in and out because of all the electricity running through him. And he was having a problem doing a full teleport. So I wondered if it was that he had only been able to teleport there because there was just the one wall that he had built.
They established in this movie that there are wormholes, that you're basically punching a hole in reality from point A to point B. So it's not like you're moving through that intervening space.
I would say they established that later in the movie.
Yes.
And I say that because later in the movie, they established that the paladins could spray a mist and could see the scars in space after they had faded. Whereas earlier in the movie, those scars looked like physical damage. And there was no sign you could spray the mist.
And there was also an aspect of almost a smoke-like after effect.
Yeah.
And they definitely played with the pressure differential of it kind of pushing out air or pulling in air and the gust of wind kind of thing, which makes sense.
Yeah.
To a degree. If you're moving just the mass of a single person, I don't know if in your average room that would really cause a big gust of wind or something, much less outdoors. So there's some of that. At one point, you know, some larger objects get teleported and it's like, okay, I get that. But in the book, they go into early on him experimenting and trying to figure out what can he do, how does it work, what can't he do, why not? To just kind of understand the ability. And here, I mean, 2-hour movie, you've got to gloss over some of that. You figure, I don't know how many pages the book is, we'll say, you know, 300-400 or whatever, average length novel. That's easily, you know, three times the length of what you've got to play with in a movie.
Yeah.
You know, figure roughly a page of the book to a, you know, minute of screen time or whatever. And that's just a heuristic or a ballpark, not an accurate measurement, of course. Because in one page of a book, you could cover decades or you could cover, you know, milliseconds.
Very true.
So I think they did a good job here. There was a couple of times where you had commented of the shaky cam or whatever. Mm. Totally agree with that.
I got nauseous during one of the fights.
I got not nauseous, but it was like it's cutting too fast and it was hard to follow what was going on.
It was a combination of that, the shaky cam, and they were teleporting as they were fighting, and it was a very long fight.
Yeah. It's hard to film that sort of a fight scene well, because with any fight scene, you're going to do cuts to shift angles, hide breaks in the action, that kind of a thing, and it makes sense. But when you're also moving characters physically through space, every time they do that with a cut, it takes the audience a minute to kind of get their bearings again. And if you do too rapid fire or whatever, even if the character is moving continuously and we're following that as an anchor point, everything else is shifting and it's disorienting.
Yeah. For the most part, I liked that long jumping fight. Because when the character we knew and loved was in control of the jumps, if you will, we were going back to places we'd already been in the movie. I think there was only one jump where they went to a swimming pool, and it was kind of a, why didn't we go to either the place where he'd gotten the wetsuit and that beach,
or Fiji? Yeah, why wasn't it a familiar spot? Well, and they kind of alluded to, once you've been somewhere, if you can use that as an anchor point and people using photos or something, that's how you can kind of trigger to go back to it. Like, you've got almost a built-in GPS sort of a thing, but you need a trigger.
Yeah.
So, again, they imply a lot on how it works, but they don't state much.
It seemed to me like a visual address book.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. The equivalent of a phone number. It's like, I know where I want to go. It's just, boom, that's what I use to remind myself of where it is.
Yeah.
We never got any real either origin, backstory, or explanation for the Paladins other than they're the bad guys hunting teleporters.
And they've been doing it for centuries.
Yes, which Griffin says, how does he know?
Hmm.
There's that question.
Well, and he's a bit of the out there conspiracy theorist type character.
Well, the only two other people we know as Paladins are the Samuel Jackson character, who's a true believer, but then also David's mom. What are the odds of somebody working for the Paladins having a kid who can teleport? Presumably, she could not, because she wouldn't have been a Paladin then. There's no sign David's father could do it. So is it just a random occurrence? I mean, there's... And again, I don't expect all of this to get explained in a movie, but you raise questions that we've got no way to answer.
Well, and presumably her daughter, from whatever relationship or whatever situation she's now in, can't. Because she left David because he could jump.
Yes. She can't do it at least yet, or as far as the mom knows.
Well, and they all seem to first teleport at age 5. Age 5 seemed to be a really magic number in this movie.
Yeah, and that doesn't make sense. You know, having it happen at puberty or something like that makes a little more sense. I mean, it's got to happen, the first teleport at some point or whatever. But we never saw what happened at age 5 for him.
No, but I wonder if age 5 was picked because that's kind of, as you're growing up and developing, age 5 is when you first understand home. Versus school.
We start to get a locational awareness.
Yeah.
Okay. That would work. Would have been nice if they tossed a line or two of dialogue in the movie to cover that. The girlfriend was really kind of easygoing in terms of taking all of this in. And even before she knows David could teleport, just following into the Colosseum and stuff like that.
Well, she knows he's full of secrets because she... has accepted since high school that he faked his death, that he got sucked in, that the ice broke.
She knew he should have died, but when she saw the snow globe thing or whatever, she knew he didn't die.
But he let everyone believe he had, which is the equivalent to faking your death. However he survived, he didn't step forward at his own funeral, a la Mark Twain's stories and say,
which we never saw.
True, true.
So, I mean, there's some aspects there, but this was done as an action-adventure movie, not an intricate, you know, plot or whodunit kind of a thing.
Well, not as a thriller.
Yeah, definitely not as a thriller. And I wouldn't even say really as a character piece.
Mm-mm.
You know, we never get huge motivations or whatever. And I don't mean any of that as a knock on the movie.
No, but they didn't try to build a community.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they were introducing us to other jumpers.
Jumper singular. Griffin's the only other one.
Technically, we saw yet another jumper. We saw the other one that got killed in...
Ah, you're right. You're right. The one in the jungle.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's no sense of a jumper community or if all of them think they're, you know, individuals. And that when David was trying to get Griffin to team up with him to take care of the Paladin problem and stuff, he should have pointed out they're targeting individuals. They have numbers we don't. Let's even the score on that.
Mm.
So... I don't know if they were expecting to do another movie based on this, because it ended in kind of a, well, what's next? I mean, literally, they ask that.
Yeah.
So, obviously, it didn't do well enough in the box office to warrant a series of movies, but it did well enough-ish that, you know, recently they've got, you know, a two-season show with Impulse that's not a continuation of this, whether it's based on the same series of novels. I just don't know if there's any direct connection to this or not.
But further exploration of the universe, at least.
Of a universe like this, is my point.
Ah, okay.
The lead character there is a girl. Whether it winds up being David's daughter or somebody else, I have no idea.
But I guess my point is, it's still within the same universe Jumper took place. We're not assuming Jumper never took... These events never took place in the universe Impulse is in.
I do not know either way.
Interesting.
It's... based on another novel in the same series of novels that Jumper is based on, I don't know that there's necessarily is or isn't any connection between that this movie and that show.
Okay.
But given the popularity of, you know, superhero fare and stuff, the superpowered non-superhero aspect in Jumper, I think, fits into that category, as does Impulse. That's, you know, there's a market for that.
Well, and David was flat told you're not a hero, but he was also pointing out it's not like he's a villain.
Bank robber.
He's a criminal.
Criminal. Fair enough. Fair enough.
You know, but he was not evil incarnate. And as Roland, I guess, Samuel L. Jackson's character pointed out, he left IOU notes.
Yeah, definitely. He's different than a lot.
I mean, he was a kid still finding himself.
Well, speaking of finding himself, I never figured out how Griffin went from encountering David in that pub in Ireland or London or wherever. And it's like, okay, David was using his teleporting. He could easily have picked up, hey, he's another jumper. How did he follow him back home?
Yeah, they never explained that.
So I don't know if there was more in the original script that just got cut. I don't think Griffin was in the book, at least the first book. But again, haven't read that in ages, so I could be wrong on that. There was another book or story on Griffin's tale that relates to the movie, but I don't think is in the continuity of the other novels. That's the joys of having a property, selling it to Hollywood, and then trying to cash in on that second time or whatever, which certainly makes sense. I don't fault the author, Stephen Gould, for that at all. You know, the fact he was able to, you know, roughly 10 years after this movie was done, get a TV show off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more power to him. And it was one that I really enjoyed, that novel. It was a fun look at superpowers without being entrenched in superheroics, costumed identities, and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the Paladins are operating from a position of, it's not purely fear, which I find interesting. So much of what we're watching these days, people seem to be operating from a position of fear.
Yeah, but there's at least Roland was such a true believer that anyone who has this power must be gotten rid of.
Right. And that's what I'm trying to figure out, what you kind of capsulize that under. Because it's not that he fears them because they have the power, but he believes only God should have that power.
He was offended they had that ability.
Yeah.
What was weird, though, is he was willing to jump through one of those gateways, not knowing what's on the other side.
Yeah.
So
at that point, I wondered if he was willing to basically imprison or mindwash a jumper to use them to capture jumpers and be part of his team.
If I were to do a TV show based on Jumper the way in this movie, okay, which again is not what Impulse is or necessarily what the books are, I would investigate the Paladin side of things a bit more, make them feel like they've got a just cause, but also go a little into the R&D. How did they get this gizmo that could open up a wormhole or whatever? Do they have captive jumpers that they're able to, you know, experiment with or whatever? Can they, in addition to kind of cracking open one of these already open wormholes, can they learn enough to do a computerized, mechanized jumping? You know.
Well, from my perspective, they have to be at least somewhat cult-like.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was certainly willing to kill David's father.
There's definitely a secret society aspect. He and Roland impersonated NSA, I think CIA, IRS, a number of things at different times.
Yeah, but and I can understand if you're in that cult-like mentality that, you know, if the son is part of the evil, assuming the father might be as well.
Well, and also give them no ground to run to.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand where that rationale came from, but it was when the girlfriend was collateral damage as far as he was concerned, too.
Well, he was actively using the girlfriend as a hostage to get David to come back.
Yeah, and it was, you know, who cares if she dies?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I began to realize, you know, the Paladins are so focused in on their mission, they don't care who dies.
Well, yeah, it's a mission, not a job.
Mm.
They buy into this, and the question is, how come? What caused Roland to go down that path?
What put the scar on his face?
Presumably another jumper and stuff. But what was Roland's first encounter into the world of jumpers that made him think he had to dedicate his life towards eradicating them?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of story that's kind of implied and baked in.
Mm-hmm.
that obviously in a 2-hour movie, you're not going to have time to get to or whatever. I don't know if the Paladins even come into play at all in the Impulse show. Again, haven't watched that yet. What little I have seen is, remember the Finder TV show that was spun out of Bones?
Yeah.
Remember the young girl that was in that?
I think so.
That's the actress who's the lead of Impulse.
Interesting.
And the guy from JAG, David James Elliott, is also in the show.
Oh, interesting.
So they've got some solid actors.
Yeah.
So, and I just don't know if it's more of a character piece or what angle they're taking there.
Mm-hmm.
But doing something that explores, again, I don't say a real world use of superpowers, but people are more likely to leverage their abilities to their own profit than, you know, put on a costume and go play hero.
This was fun.
Yeah.
This was a teenager finding out what he could do. And in that context, facing good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
He was, at first, he was viewing those bank robberies as seemingly victimless crimes. He didn't hit anybody. He didn't hold a gun to anybody. He understood he took other people's money, but he left IOU notes.
Well, and the question is, was he continuing to do that, or was that just something he did to get started?
It seemed to be what he did to get started, because they kept saying they were looking into the bank robberies from 8 years ago.
I guess the question is, if Roland hadn't gone into David's apartment and started the events of the movie, what path was David on?
He seemed to be just kicking back, gambling. Mm-hmm. We saw all of the...
ton of chips, yeah.
Yeah, from various casinos. And seeing the world.
What I would have liked to have seen is, one, him at the casino at some point to justify all the casino chips and why he hadn't cashed them out. And two, see him like at a roulette wheel or something, using just a subtle aspect of his powers just to nudge the roulette ball over a slot or something.
Yeah.
You know, or somehow cheating at the craps table or something. You know, were there more subtle uses of his power that would help him get, make money immorally, if not illegally.
Yeah.
So there was, I think, a lot they could do with this premise. And what they did was a fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. It was action adventure. Was it particularly deep? Not really, but it didn't set out to be. You know, it had good effects. It had good characters, good actors. You know, it was a fun movie.
Yeah.
It felt like they were trying to make it into a franchise a little.
Yes.
And it would have benefited from having a franchise around it to fill in some of these blanks.
Yeah.
And again, as I recall, there are 4 books based, or that this is based on. And again, one of the later ones is what Impulse is based on. I don't know. I know it's like, I think, 2 seasons of 10 episodes for Impulse, which is on the list for us to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know if it's gotten stuff beyond that.
Okay. I'm curious to read the books also.
Yeah, definitely. I've got them as ebooks.
Nice.
The first one was Jumper. The second, I think, was Reflex. I don't remember the names. I think the third was Impulse. I'm not sure about the fourth. But at one point, when I was fresh out of college and stuff, I was reading a ton of novels. This was one of the ones I had encountered. Loved it. And I think I knew they'd done a second book and had gotten it, but I don't even know if I'd realized they'd had a third and fourth originally.
Interesting.
And I know I haven't read those. I don't think I've read Reflex. It's been ages since I read Jumper. So again, that's on the list.
Nice.
So once we finish the maybe the Lost Fleet books, or maybe before we do that last trilogy of those, we may end into these.
Okay.
So anything else on this?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.